Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus, the reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, I have the filmmaker behind Skinwalkers and Stranger Things of the Unseen Realm. And not only do we dive into that unseen realm, but also who might be accessing it, why they might be accessing it, and what might be coming through from the other side. But before we get into this fascinating conversation today, we of course have to do news and updates and front of house. As far as news and updates go, not too much on that front. Just trying to do a little bit of a poll as far as what you guys would like to see for the Patreon. I'm trying to do a little bit more exclusive content over on that side. And there's two different options I could possibly do for that. So if you guys don't mind shooting me a message on social media or through email, letting me know what you guys would like to see. Either one, I can try to start doing extended episodes of the show where the show will have an additional half hour to an hour afterwards. That'll just be a Patreon exclusive. Not chopping the episodes themselves. It's going to be a whole additional conversation. Or the other side of it is that I have a couple different ideas for a couple different solo shows that I could possibly do. One of which could be one diving into a plethora of different topics, not necessarily just pertaining to cryptids, UFOs, aliens, and stuff, but also pertaining to just whatever I find interesting that week. And the other side of it, of course, is a show that I could do that I was thinking about calling Classified Creatures, where we dive into some creature reports. But as far as that one goes, if you guys are interested in hearing more with that one, I would like to have more encounter reports come in that I'd be able to talk about on that. Possibly even do a thing too where I have a lot of you listeners come on, even if it's only 20 minutes to a half hour or so, have you guys come on, talk about your experiences and stuff. I recently had somebody in the Discord who mentioned the fact that I have a lot of really deep conversations on this show, and they don't feel like they'd be able to run with that. That isn't necessarily the case. If anybody wants to come on and share their experiences and stuff, it'd be a totally different conversation. Like I said, with the show, it kind of organically develops depending on who the guest is. So if anybody is interested in coming on the show, but they've been afraid to message me about coming on the show because they think that the conversation might go over their head or something like that, definitely not the case. So don't be shy. Shoot me a message. Let me know if you guys be interested in coming on and talking about your experiences. But yeah, as far as the Patreon goes, let me know what you guys think you guys would like to see over there. I'd hate to split up episodes and stuff, so I'm not going to do that. I'm trying to find other options to go about that, but definitely need your guys' opinion before I go down any particular path as far as more Patreon exclusive content. And moving into the front of house, if anyone has an encounter that they would like to report, you guys can report those to omm.encounterreports@outlook.com. Either one, you guys can type it out, or you guys can record yourself and you guys can email it to me. Depending on what you want to do with it, either one, I can use it for the show itself, or two, if you guys just want somebody to talk about this kind of stuff with, but you don't want your story getting out to anybody, that's totally fine too. Just let me know what you guys want to do with it. And if you guys are at a place that's somewhat close to me, I might even be able to come out and investigate it myself, but none of that will happen unless you guys report those encounters to omm.encounterreports.outlook.com or go to the link tree, and there is a specific report and encounter submission form. And if you guys enjoyed this show, don't forget to go and check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, where we deep dive into a plethora of different topics. A lot of it is our research, but we definitely do have some guests that pop on here and there. But if you guys enjoyed this show, I definitely think you guys will enjoy that show. And there also is somewhat of a comedy aspect to it, depending on what the episode is. So if you guys dig that kind of stuff in your podcast, definitely go and check out Bizarre Encounters. And then we also do a Patreon/YouTube exclusive show that's called Bizarre Inquiries. For that one, we've kind of expanded what we talk about on that one, where originally it was listener questions, but now we're starting to expand into doing clips. We're doing articles. We are still taking in questions and stuff. It's kind of our catch-all fun show. So if anybody has anything they would like to submit for us to talk about on that show, whether it's just a video clip, an article that you guys want us to talk about, or a question you guys want us to discuss, you guys can get a hold of me through social media and send all that kind of stuff over. And if you guys want to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one is to go and join the Patreon. Over there, I have a $1, a $3, and a $5 tier. All of them have 7-day free trials, and there will be a lot of expanding as far as the Patreon goes. So go and sign up now and make it so that I can keep expanding it. I'd like to do some hangouts and some other stuff, but I'd like some more people to pop in for that one because I'd hate to go live and only have a couple people show up. So if you guys are interested in getting involved in all of that stuff and expanding the Patreon with me, you guys can go and check that out. And again, use that 7-day free trial. And the second way you guys can support the show is through the Open Minds Media merch store. Over there, it's not just podcast designs. It's a bunch of cryptid, UFO, conspiracy, paranormal related type designs. There is, of course, a handful of podcast related designs, but the majority of the show of the shop itself is a bunch of other non-podcast related designs. So don't think if you go and check out the Open Minds Media merch store that it's all just going to have my logo on it. It's definitely extended past that, and it's something that I want to continue pushing. One of my new designs that I did was my Reptilians for America one. I also did a Respect the Forest one with Sasquatch on it. So if any of that stuff sounds cool to you, you guys can go and check that out. I have some more designs that am working on that will be hitting the store soon. And if you guys want to scoop anything for yourself, you guys can use code CRYPTID10 at checkout for 10% off. Or you guys can go and join the Patreon, and each of those tiers includes a specific promo code that is exclusive to that tier that you can only access through there. So if you guys want to get bigger discounts, you guys can always go and join the Patreon first. And the third way you guys can support the show is through leaving reviews or ratings for the show on iTunes or Spotify. Anything you guys are willing to do, I definitely appreciate it. If you guys think I deserve a rating for the show, I'd absolutely love to be able to read those 5-star reviews from iTunes and stuff on the show. But the only way the show is going to continue to be able to keep expanding and make it so I can have more people coming on and sharing their encounters, and we can expand this community of inquirers and open-minded folk, is with your guys' help. So anything you guys are willing to do, even if it's sharing the show, I greatly, greatly appreciate. And if you guys want to stay up to date on the show, you guys can go and check out Inquiries of Our Reality and Open Minds Media across social media, Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And every single thing that I mention is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, filmmaker and researcher, Chad Riley. How's it going today, man?
Well, pretty good. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Was pretty excited about this show. I heard a previous conversation that you've had on a different show, and after hearing it, man, I had to get you to come on this show and talk about, well, your research as a whole, honestly, and your newest film. So, perfect opportunity, man. I'm really looking forward to the conversation today.
Was that Tony Merkel you were talking about?
Yes, sir. Yes, it was.
Mr. Merkel. Love that guy.
Say, honestly, man, one of the best podcasts that's out there as far as like covering this topic of stuff. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, everybody, he's like on the top of the list most of the time as far as like when you talk to people about this kind of stuff. Like, everybody's been on Tony's show. Everybody knows Tony personally and stuff. Like, he's definitely made an impact on the community as a whole. And he just has an awesome group of people end up coming on as guests. So it's more often than not, if you have a good guest on, at some point they've been on the confessionals, I swear.
Yeah, next time I get up to Tennessee, I'm going to have to go see him, spend some time in his studio.
Man, I have still yet to actually be anywhere near Tennessee to even know where his studio and stuff's at. At least from all the videos and everything I've seen, though, it looks like that guy's got like a beautiful studio. And one day, maybe, I'll make it, get the opportunity to be able to hang out with him there.
Yep.
But kind of hopping into today's episode, man, for anybody that may not be familiar with who you are, what your background is, what you research into, why don't you let them know a little bit about yourself before we get into the meat and potatoes of the conversation?
Okay. Well, I started out, I was working as a researcher, and I eventually got mixed up with the Fall Brothers. We worked on a couple of films. We worked on Hollow Earth Chronicles, Episode 1, The Dark Chambers. And we also worked on Belly of the Beast. It was a film when they went to go work for Skywatch, working with Tom Horn. I did media consultant work on that film. And then the third film that we did was called Higher Entities, The Lost Tapes. So then I decided to go solo, and I've worked on my most current film that is now out, and it's called Skinwalkers and Stranger Things of the Unseen Realm. And that has a lot of the research that I've been working on for the last year and a half. And it's about 2.5 hours long. And a lot of people like Derek Gilbert and several others that have watched it, they all said it's very academic level. So, you know, if you know the basics like the Nephilim, the fallen angels and certain things like that, it shouldn't be too much. But I connect a lot of dots, and I show how a lot of this stuff is completely interconnected and that all these things flee in the name of Jesus.
See, that's definitely something we've dived into a plethora of times on the show, the whole, like, Nephilim concept linked in with all this kind of stuff. And as far as, like, the Skinwalker stuff goes, I mean, people have their typical idea of what Skinwalkers are based on, like, Skinwalker Ranch and everything like that, but I've always kind of felt that it's something that exceeds just, like, the legend of, like, the Skinwalker, as, like, the natives tell. And, I mean, at least from, like, the understanding that I get from that, doing a lot of, like, research and stuff into, like, Native American lore and stuff, people kind of associate it with, like, these portals and with, the, like, alien activity and stuff, but, like, the origin of the Skinwalker as a whole kind of comes from, like, for lack of a better term, shape-shifting, like, medicine men. I mean, I kind of believe that they don't necessarily completely shape-shift, but rather have, like, an ability to change people's perception. But obviously the whole Skinwalker Ranch thing is something that extends way beyond that. So at least, like, for you coming into, like, your research diving into this, like, where did it all kind of start for you, and where did you kind of start connecting in with, like, the Skinwalkers, at least coming in with a biblical perspective on things?
We had went to do interviews with Keith over at End Times Production. And while we were there, he was interviewing Justin and Wes. And after he got done interviewing them on the newest film that we had just done, he actually was like, all right, I got to get you on camera. He's like, I want you to talk about some stuff. And I was like, well, I wasn't prepared to talk about anything, so I don't know what you want me to talk about. And he's like, well, talk about Skinwalker Ranch and some of that stuff that you talk about. He's like, he goes, you know a lot about that. So I did a video with him. And it blew up and became so big that I was like, maybe I need to do a little more digging deeper into a lot of this stuff and try to see exactly how this stuff really ties into scripture. And so started looking into a lot of that. I probably read like 15 books. And after I got done reading all those books, I had about 480 pages of notes. And what I kept seeing was that, you know, the main thing that I focused on while I was looking into Skinwalker Ranch was this thing that they have out there called the hitchhiker phenomenon. And so as I was looking at this hitchhiker phenomenon, it quickly led me into remote viewing. And when I looked into remote viewing, come to find out they were some of the early pioneers that encountered the hitchhiker phenomenon long before anybody was ever even knew about Skinwalker Ranch or were talking about it. And when they brought Uri Geller over and they were, you know, checking him out as far as like how he bent spoons and did things with his mind, he shut things, turned things off, and that he could also remote view, they started studying him. And while they were studying him, all the scientists that were studying him, they started having poltergeist activity taking place in their homes. And they started seeing like bizarre cryptids and shadow people and just all this weird, bizarre stuff. Well, then I was reading another book, and it brought up the account that Kenneth Arnold, in his biography, he had wrote about after he saw the 9 craft flying over Mount Rainier, Washington, back in 1947, which was about a week and a half before the Roswell incident, that after he saw the 9 craft, that he started having poltergeist activity taking place in his home as well. And even his daughter has gone on multiple interviews and talked about this and talked about the poltergeist activity and how they saw bizarre cryptids and shadow people and aliens and UFOs and just weird stuff after that encounter. So I'm seeing this connection here, you know, that this you know, this one parameter that is just completely connected to all these different facets. And another amazing thing that I found out looking into the whole thing about remote viewing is that it came out of Scientology. That, L. Ron Hubbard, you know, I don't know if you know much about the OT the levels operating thetans and all that, what they talk about and what they believe. But the Scientologists believe that they become like superhumans, almost like X-Men. And even Kenneth Grant in some of his books in the Typhonian series, that he talks about the black magic, that's also what they believe, is that they become superhuman. They become almost like gods, and they have these powers and that they can do things. Well, I found out that Ingo Swann, as well as Hal Puthoff, the two guys that created the whole remote viewing program out at Stanford Research Institute, and later would go on to train the Army people like Joseph McConnell and some of these others, that they learned all their techniques from Scientology. And in fact, Ingo Swann and Hal Puthoff both were OT-7s. That's the highest level you can attain in Scientology. And when you know that, you know, L. Ron Hubbard was a understudy of Aleister Crowley through Jack Parsons, and that they did the Babylon working ritual, well, then, you know, that just, it blows it even more wide open. It's like, what is all this?
Say, all the stuff they were trying to do in the desert, man, I've always kind of wondered if they've opened up portals, one, I'm sure that they have, but also just from tampering with that kind of stuff, if they've also temporarily like altered timelines where maybe there's this like correction factor that's going on. But when you start diving into them, man, there's too much like weirdness to it. And especially like even with his death, where he ended up, Jack Parsons ended up blowing up at his own house. Like, I feel like there's other connections to that. Like, that guy was trying to open up another portal into somewhere else. And I know a lot of people, when you get into this whole portal concept, you kind of dive into the whole like sci-fi type concept that you think that there's like, you know, you're opening up to other dimensions and everything like that. But it seems like a lot of the people that are actually actively trying to do this have biblical ties to things. Of course, looking at it from like a satanic perspective, but it doesn't seem like very many people going into this kind of stuff are looking at it from like the, I'm going to open up a dimension to another reality with aliens. Like, they have the full on intention that they are trying to open up portals to assumably hell. So, I mean, that kind of just shows in a way that, you know, they try to cover this kind of stuff with these like sci-fi concepts, but there's this underworking of the biblical mindset through all of this kind of stuff. And it seems like we're kind of at a weird time now where people are just trying to ignore how biblical things are getting. And it seems like they're calling it like progression, that like people are moving away from religion. But it's kind of weird that as everybody's quote moving away from religion in society, that more of these concepts are popping up left and right. And it's getting to the point where it's really, really hard to ignore. And I think that's also what's kind of leading into like this new age perspective of Christians, where they're diving into this kind of weird stuff. Because, you know, I was raised Catholic and everything, and you don't ask these kind of questions. You don't dive into this kind of stuff. But with the new age of people understanding this kind of stuff, I feel like it's bringing people back into the fold, because they actually feel like they can ask questions about all this kind of weird stuff going on around them now.
Yeah. And also, what was it? It's interesting that you go into a lot of that. I'm just going to look something up real quick, but let me pop the thing back up. I turned the camera off where I can't see. Yeah, and what was it? Sam Bruno was a Air Force officer in their Special Investigations Unit, what they call the AFOSI. And he actually started an investigation into Parsons. After Parsons had lost his security clearance, one of the things that Parsons did was he went and worked for John Hughes. And while he was working for him, he actually took some classified documents without permission. And once he did that, they started, you know, they of course had to go to his house, get the materials, and they began an investigation and started questioning him. Well, as they dug more and more into him and what he was involved in, they became even more and more disturbed. And at one point, Sam Bruno actually came right out and asked him, he said, you know, did you cause this, the whole UFO wave, did you have something to do with this? And he said, very well, probably so, because, you know, they were doing the Babylon working ritual between the years 1945 and 1946. And he said, you know, in that investigation, when they were questioning him, he said that he had punched a hole through space-time, and he was unable to close it. And not only that, but they also went so far, Sam Bruno did, he went so far as to say he believes that what they did was they widened what Crowley had already done back in 1918 when he summoned AWOS. And AWOS was sitting there dictating the Book of the Law to him. So he believed that he actually widened that portal. And like I said, you know, the whole UFO wave kicked off. Even Kenneth Grant you know, bragged about how it was a member of the OTO that had started the whole UFO flap, and he was talking about Jack Parsons when he was saying this. So they were very proud of this fact, and they bragged about it all the time. But yeah, you had a U.S. Air Force special investigator who was looking into him, and the more and more he dug into him. And another interesting thing was that when they looked at, there was a gentleman by the name of Charles Rice Tussle, who also was the founder of Jehovah's Witness. And back then, he had this thing that the end of the world was going to begin on a particular date. I'm not going to say what that date is. People can go look it up. But another thing that they uncovered and they found out through their investigation was that Jack Parsons was born on that day that Charles Rice Tussle said that the end of the world would begin. So I'm very, you know, how fitting is it that he would be the one who go on to perform this Babylon working ritual to bring about the whore of Babylon and to try to bring about the end of the world and refer to himself as the Antichrist.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. Man, I mean, even Crowley talking as a whole, man, these people feel like they've opened up multiple places throughout the world. Because, I mean, you got Crowley, who one was talking about how he believed that he, you know, opened the portal that let out the Loch Ness Monster. And of course, he had his interactions with Lamb, too, which, of course, kind of looks a lot like a gray. And I mean, depending on like the perspective you look at this stuff in, of course, they're looking at it from, like I mentioned a few times, like the kind of biblical perspective on things. But these images that we're getting are extraterrestrial, which kind of begs into the question that something I talk about all the time on the show. If we're talking about the same thing, when we're talking about these things, if demons, aliens, possibly even angels, they're all something that one perspective sees as extraterrestrials and the other perspective sees as, again, angels and demons.
Yeah, that was the thing, is that a lot of what Crowley believed in, what he was really into, he had got from John Dee, who was the alchemist that worked for Queen Elizabeth. Him and Edward Kelly, they talked, you know, they were all about these Enochian entities, is what they referred to them as. They didn't call them angels or demons. That's why there's the one quote that Crowley said, today they call them angels and demons, tomorrow they'll call them something else. He didn't even refer to them as angels or demons. But real quick, I just had another thought about what we were previously talking about these realms and these dimensions. One of the things that Kenneth Grant talks about, and like I said, if you look into a lot of the Kabbalistic or what they call the Kelopot, Klippoth, and things like that, there's a a thing that they talk about. They refer to it as the other side, but it actually has a name. And like I said, Kenneth Grant and several other magicians have come right out and talked about this. And they call it the Ashtakari is the name of it. That's the actual name. And there was this researcher out there by the name of Freeman Fly that had brought to my attention years ago that in the book Aleister Crowley and the Hidden God, one of the things that Kenneth Grant said in there was that the sole purpose that NASA was created was to make contact with the other side. And I don't know why, but that just stuck in my head. Like, what are they talking about? Are they talking about like aliens, you know, demons? What were they trying to make contact with? And it was maybe a couple of years later that I stumbled upon the whole thing about the Kelopot and the Klipith and looking into the Ashtakari. And another name for the Ashtakari is the other side. Well, this is a demonic realm that these entities reside in. And that, what was it? They said something about five kings of Edom rule over this demonic realm. And I found that very fascinating as well, that they were talking about Edom and these rulers over Edom that rule over this demonic realm. So do with that what you will as well.
I mean, talk about some weird stuff hidden in plain sight, too. Like, obviously, when you dig into a lot of this occult stuff, it's like they have to show what they're doing right in front without being too obvious and direct about it. I mean, depending on how you look at it, because once you see the occult symbolism, it's kind of hard to hide. But I mean, the whole concept of that is seen through so much different media now that it's unquestionable about the fact that they're trying to almost normalize the concept of this. Because one, of course, you have Stranger Things with the Upside Down. On the other side of it, you even got movies like Insidious, when they go into that other astral type realm that almost kind of seems like it's somewhat of like a reverse of this normal realm, where it has the same buildings, same places, but it's this dark kind of creepy ambiance to it. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other ones I could probably list off, but obviously hiding it in plain sight to try to normalize this kind of stuff. And I mean, even with just like the hydrogen particle colliders, I mean, you have the one over in CERN, you have the one in Switzerland, CERN, where they're obviously doing these really, really weird rituals around them and pretending like it's all for the means of science. But then you also have ones that, like, I believe there's one in Tennessee that they straight up say that they're trying to open portals to other realms. So it's like, you can't say, if you would have said that kind of stuff directly like 5 years ago, you know, people probably would have looked a little bit more into it. But now it's like, they're almost hitting you with so much stuff all at once that people just don't end up looking into this kind of stuff, even though it's happening in plain sight right in front of you. And NASA, just another thing to kind of dive into. Like, as a whole, everybody knows that there's all this weirdness around NASA. Like, they spend all this time creating all these like fake films and everything. Like, there was one in particular where, you know, they're showing like the one of the rooms as somebody was getting a tour through NASA. And on one of the screens, you could see like the green screen behind the astronauts that were supposedly in the space station and stuff. So it's like they spend so much time doing this sleight of hand illusion thing that, of course, they'd be digging into weird occult things. And for all the funding that they spend on all these like fake projects, that money has to go somewhere. So, like, assumably what the idea is with NASA is that you think that all these tax dollars are being spent on, you know, space travel, trying to get into space, trying to do that. But they end up spending all of this money and time on actual trying to open up portals to other realms instead of actually that. And then they just put up this charade where everybody thinks that they're trying to like dig into space and everything. And I mean, especially when you dive into like the moon landing and all the weirdness around that, it almost kind of seems like these people know that the way to get to other places isn't necessarily through space. Like, you have this whole concept about like wormholes and everything you see through sci-fi, and they kind of make it feel like it's like the folding of space bending through paper. But trying to normalize the concept, I feel like some of these things aren't necessarily, again, as they speak, where wormholes might actually be a straight wormhole into another reality, another dimension, possibly even into, for lack of a better term, like the demonic realm. And again, they're just trying to hide this stuff in plain sight, normalize it piece by piece for everybody so that when everything hits the fan one day, everybody kind of knew what was happening and isn't as freaked out by it. The same trickling you've been seeing with, like, you know, sci-fi with aliens since the 50s.
Yeah, and they knew a lot of this back then. I mean, keep in mind that under Project Paperclip, we absorbed over 1,600 Nazis, and they brought their beliefs with them. So they not only their what knowledge that they had, but their beliefs as well. And when we absorbed them, vast majority went into the OSS, which would become later on the CIA, but the rest of them all went into NASA. And so that was the thing, is you look at a lot of the programs that were going on back then that you brought up, Stranger Things. Well, that's completely based off of the Montauk Project. That was a real deal that took place in Montauk, New York, at Camp Hero. And, you know, even, what is it, Christopher Garantano, who's done a film called The Montauk Chronicles, he blows a lot of this stuff wide open. Even Terry Nichols in his book, you know, Montauk Project and the Philadelphia Experiment, you know, they talk about a lot of this stuff. And how they were literally, they were brainwashing these kids, but they were, you know, using drugs. They would beat them. They would do psychological, physical torture. They would make them watch, you know, they would beat dogs and puppies to death, beat other kids to death in front of them. And, you know, they were seeing this stuff. Well, if you look at what Russ Dizdar and his research that he wrote, a book called The Black Awakening. And in that book, he talks about, you know, the reason why they have to shatter their minds is they shatter their minds to open them up to demonic possession so that they can take on these demonic entities and have these supernatural abilities. So that's, you know, because they talked about things, the Montauk boys, how they could read one another's minds. You know, they could think of things and things would just completely, you know, manifest out of nowhere. They had this special chair that they could sit in that would supposedly enhance their powers, and how, you know, a vast majority of the research started out where they were using that Sage radar tower, and they figured out that they could alter people's behavior by certain frequencies and certain things that they would broadcast. They learned that they could cause teenagers to congregate. They could trigger crime sprees. They could even cause animals to run in and out of town. You know, just all sorts of bizarre, crazy stuff. So yeah, they were messing with all sorts of stuff, and they knew that this stuff was demonic even back then, because, you know, that's one of the things that I tackle in the film and I get into, is I show all the different things that they did, you know, not just like the Tuskegee experiment, but even the MIT Quaker oatmeal thing, where they were feeding radioactive oatmeal to, you know, children in a foster home. And, you know, they were also, they gave over 600 women supposedly these vitamin drinks, but they didn't tell them that they had, you know, radioactive particles in there, and they were seeing how fast that the radioactive isotopes would move into the placenta and things like that, and all the children that died because of that. And, you know, so once I start establishing all that and how they even sprayed chemicals and citizens in Missouri and Texas, you know, for, you know, years, and that, you know, numerous children, you know, this one building in Missouri where they were spraying these radioactive chemicals, 90% of the people that lived in the building were children under the age of 13. So they were using people as test subjects. Well, you know, if they'll do stuff like that, how far of a stretch is it to think that they would do satanic rituals and things of that nature to open portals and to make contact and to get things from these entities and be working in league with them? I don't think it's that much far of a stretch.
No, not at all. And I'm glad that you brought this up, because it actually kind of fits in with a theory that I've been presenting lately. I just did an episode of it on my other show. But this thing that I've been calling the continued experiment theory, where I feel like it's somewhat, it could explain a lot of the UFO abduction phenomenon, coming from more of like a human perspective, more so than what people think. And I was kind of dating back, diving back into like when LSD was first discovered, and then when the Nazis started actually using like different psychotropic drugs in order to, again, try to do this type of research. And then it continued on into like the UFO phenomenon. And not to like go back over the whole theory too much, but essentially what I was trying to suggest is the fact that what I believe a lot of the current UFO abduction phenomenon is just continued Nazi experiments, because once they came over, after you mentioned, from Operation Paperclip, you know, they're still doing all this kind of stuff just under different means. And after that too, of course, they had what was it called, they made it so that there was a bunch of different experiments that you couldn't conduct because it was against ethical codes. Totally brain farting on what the name of the paperwork was on that one, though. But right after that, they needed to be able to still do this kind of testing, but not make it obvious to the public. And obviously, these kind of programs end up coming out, such as like MK Ultra and everything. They just kind of switched the name later on. But basically, what I was trying to suggest was that they've used psychedelic drugs and they've used different frequencies in order to make people believe that they're being abducted by extraterrestrials. And I feel like part of that definitely could be the fact that they seem to always dive into people that have remote viewing abilities, psychic abilities, and it always seems like right after UFO abductions, they're usually enhanced. And my question for that is, if they are continuing these experiments and they're actually trying to open up these portals and everything to other realms, then of course they're going to have a center focus on people that have these abilities. They can't openly test on them, so they abduct them, make them think that they're aliens actually doing this to them. And through all of their testing, I believe that's what actually ends up making it so that right after their experiences, they end up having a lot more abilities, and they have a lot more remote viewing capabilities. It's because they're keeping an eye on these people, and again, they're trying to use them for these continued experiments to, again, open up things such as portals.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that a lot of this stuff, I mean, you know, you look at the powers that demons are said to possess, like psychokinesis and a bunch of the different things out there. I go through that, and I break a lot of that down in the film as well, but the thing is that that was what the whole, like what you're talking about as far as the LSD and that whole hippie movement and all that, the U.S. government needed a much larger test subject than what they had at their disposal at the time, because, you know, they had to use either willing participants or even people in the military, but they needed a much larger test pool of subjects. So that's why they reached out to people like Timothy Leary and some of these other people that I talk about in the film. And I mean, even look at that area, the area where this took place. I don't know if you're familiar with the Lizard City out there in Los Angeles that they discovered back in the 1930s and things like that. That's barely maybe 7 or 10 miles away from Laurel Canyon, where the whole movement exploded out there, and all these most famous musicians in the world would go on to influence generations all over the world. You know, even Jim Morrison, you know, who was a big fan of Huxley, had read his book, The Doors Perception, and that's where he got the name for his band, The Doors. And I mean, you just look at how it's all interconnected. I mean, when I say it's connected, I'm not even remotely kidding that this is all connected. And that's, you got that Lizard City that is a charged area. Even Los Angeles itself is a charged area. You know, it's like, you got to ask yourself, why did they call it Los Angeles, City of Angels? You know, I believe it is a city of angels, but it's a city of fallen angels. And that's the thing, is that, you know, what they are in league with, what they are working with. And, you know, look at what is it, that one documentary, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You know, you have all these musicians, famous musicians, and they all keep saying the same thing, that they sold their soul to the devil, and how they let these entities or this something come into them, and that it's not even them performing. It's, you know, something else that takes over them, and it's like this persona or whatever. And like I said, that's totally demonic. So,
and I mean, how many different celebrities have like alter egos when they come out on stage too? And it's gotten to the point now where it's like, you see all these like big concerts and everything, and they're clearly all rituals, but it's, again, like the average person isn't up with this kind of stuff, because they try to keep you too distracted with all this materialistic aspects of like normal life, where you don't actually start noticing the occult symbolism and everything. But like, the one of the references that I always try to make with some of these like mind type experiments is the whole like Travis Scott concert fiasco, where he had that weird portal that opened up on stage, then everybody all started acting like crazy and pushing each other and shoving each other and everything. And I mean, obviously that's been going on for a long time, like you'd mentioned with the Doors and everything, and even getting into like the Grateful Dead. I mean, they had the show that never existed, which was supposed to be like a straight government experiment on the mind to see if they could convince people that this event happened that never actually happened. And on top of that, I mean, look at all the LSD that followed the Grateful Dead, and think about how many different people they could have experimented on that willingly took LSD. Then afterwards, they just messed with their heads and tried to see what they could do with them. And of course, with LSD, for example, and using different other psychedelics, it seems like it increases psychedelic or telekinetic type abilities and remote viewing type abilities. So, I mean, like, once you have like this mass group of giant people that are all concert goers, you know, you're just passing out LSD, pretending like nothing's about it. It's almost like you just have a smorgasbord to be able to pick from. And assumably, if you're hip with this kind of stuff and you know what to look for, you know, you get in a giant crowd to take all this LSD, and then you can go, all right, that one's one of the ones we want. That's one of the ones we want. That's one of the ones we want. Then after that, then you're able to follow them and conduct whatever other experiments on them. And I mean, how many people that used to go to these Grateful Dead concerts and stuff have talked about how they had UFO extraterrestrial, UFO abduction experiences. And that's just another thing that I think that's a continuation of, again, them trying to open up these portals, trying to cover up the phenomenon and make it seem like it's something less spiritual, and then just kind of pushing it down the road. We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole thing about like Edgewood Arsenal, which, you know, you can get into like MK Chickawit. There's also, like you're talking about the MK Ultra, but there was also one called MK Offen that a lot of people don't know about. They've never heard of, and they don't know anything about it. That was the more occult side that where they were doing, where they were sending people into seances, and they were, you know, getting, you know, they were dealing with actual witches. There was one leak, or one lady by the name of Sybil Leak. And she was one of the most well-known witches in the world at the time. And this lady was so prominent that when she was a child, like H.G. Wells, Lawrence of Arabia, Aleister Crowley, all of these people would come and visit her home and talk with her and her family, because they were some of the most well-established and known witches at the time. And even M.K. Offen, years later, would reach out to Sybil Leak and talk to her. And at one point, keep in mind when this was going on, so there was a couple of members of what they, you know, a lot of people know this supposed group called the Collins Elite, and that's not necessarily what they were known as. They weren't known as the Collins Elite. There was an author that wrote a book that titled them that, but they were known as the Writers. And they dealt with a pastor by the name of Ray Boucher, who is not only a friend of mine, but he's also a colleague, and he sent me all the paperwork, and I dug through everything that was all the documents that were going back and forth between this group and Linda Bolton Howe. And so these people were members of the government that worked in the DOD, and they were witnessing things that were very disturbing to them. They had seen satanic rituals being carried out, that portals were being opened, and that they were seeing things come and go, and, you know, actual physical craft and different things. So they found it more disturbing than anything. And so that's why they reached out to this pastor named Ray Boucher. And the reason why they reached out to him at the time is because he was also a member of MUFON, had been a member of MUFON for several decades. And so they came to him and were talking to him, and he put them in contact with Linda Moulton Howe. And she wrote a book that talks about a lot of this stuff. I'll have to get you the name later on. I can't think of it right off the top of my head. But that was the thing is, you know, even then we had people coming out and saying this. And there was another lady years later that David Icke interviewed several times by the name of Arizona Wilder. And she even, you know, has done interviews. I've got a clip of her at the beginning of the film where she talks about how she has seen satanic rituals being carried out on military bases. And she goes so far as to say that a vast majority of what, you know, we call satanic rituals and OTO is mixed up with naval intelligence, and that they are actively performing these rituals and that they are summoning these things into our dimension.
I mean, kind of diving into like the whole military aspect of this kind of stuff too. Like, obviously most of these people are based in Freemasonry, it seems like, all the high ups and all this kind of stuff. And I recently did a Freemason episode on my other show too, actually. And one of the things we kind of dived into was the whole fact that they kind of hide almost like what their actual belief system is behind something that almost looks like it's semi-Christian based, where they kind of leave stuff kind of not directly to the point. They'll say stuff like one has to have belief in one God, and they don't necessarily specify like which God they're trying to pray to or necessarily believe in. And kind of getting into like the whole fallen angels concept too with this. So the whole extraterrestrial concept of the Collins Elite, obviously their whole view on all of this stuff was the fact that they believe that all these extraterrestrials were actually demons, and kind of linking in with, I guess, partially the kind of the government aspect of things. At least from like my understanding and what I kind of view a lot of this extraterrestrial phenomenon could possibly be, is the aliens are actually like some type of biological drone, so to speak, that they're not necessarily the body of the being that's inhabiting them. It's more of like a temporary thing where you have these Nephilim, these fallen angels, these disembodied beings coming into these extraterrestrials and
avatars.
Using them essentially as like avatars. But on the other side, you're talking about like the government doing all these like rituals and everything too. And I'm assuming that there obviously is some type of link between the government and extraterrestrials. That's why, like, you never hear about abduction phenomenon, even though we're talking about UFOs and all that kind of stuff. So, assumably, these things need to be able to get here in order to be able to inhabit these bodies. So, my assumption is that they would do these rituals in order to bring the disembodied beings to this reality so that they would be able to get into these avatars. And then from there, they can do whatever other research they're planning on doing with it. But they're basically opening up the gateway to let these things into our realm so that they can attach something physical. And then they can use that as a temporary drone until maybe these experiments continue on and they find a way to establish something where they can find permanent bodies again.
Well, not only that, but if you look into a lot of what the UFO researchers are actually saying about these things, and yes, they all agree that they are, these are some sort of synthetic bodies that they are residing in, that something is controlling them, like you said, like an avatar, like the movie Avatar. You know, even like Nigel Kerner, Johnny Mack, Whitley Strieber, Carla Turner, there's a lot of these researchers out there. They talk about this and they say that this is the one thing that a lot of people don't talk about. Everybody gets hung up on the fact that this hybridization program and you know, what are they doing with humans? It's like, but a lot of people just completely gloss right over the fact, and a lot of researchers have said this. This has something to do with the human soul. They are fascinated with the human soul. And it's like, even Nigel Kerner, I believe he was the one who actually went so far as to say it's almost like they are trying to tap into everlasting life through humanity. And I thought that was very fascinating to hear a UFO researcher make that statement. And if I remember correctly, he wasn't even a Christian when he said that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how the phenomenon is all starting. It seems like it's kind of coming into this like center point where everybody's starting to kind of agree upon these different concepts involved with all this kind of stuff. And my kind of idea with the hybridization thing, if you're taking this extraterrestrial DNA, as we're calling it, so to speak, and you're mixing with human DNA to create these hybrid type beings, isn't that almost like another way of looking at it? Like they're creating a new generation of like Nephilim? Because if you're taking these fallen angels, these Nephilim, and then they're breeding or hybridizing with humans, it's creating another generation of a new type of like Nephilim type being, essentially. That I feel like that's part of maybe the intention behind it, is that maybe they may not be able to fully reside in this realm, but maybe they can create another offspring where they can start somewhat existing in this realm as they continue on.
I can also look at it from the point, are they taking stuff from people, like, you know, whether it be skin samples or DNA or whatever, you know. It's the same thing when you think about people that are into Satanism or witchcraft, that they believe if they can get a hold of your blood, fingernails, hair, and things like that, that they can attach things to you. They can have some sort of a power over you, something to do with like mind control, things of this nature, which is basically, like I said, that's what all this stuff about Stranger Things and Montauk and all that, it's what it all started out. Even MK Ultra was all about mind control, even Edgewood Arsenal, and that they were trying to, you know, create like these supposed super soldiers that they could, you know, have them, you know, not be affected by certain things, and that they would not question orders, and that they would just obey. And, you know, like I said, when you see a lot of the people that were involved in a lot of this stuff and what all that they went on to do later on, you know, it's pretty dark. It's far darker than most people, you know, most people don't even realize just how dark it truly gets. And like I said, the whole thing about MK Offen, when you find out that they were dealing with that witch Sybil Leek, you know, one of the things when they were talking to her one time, she went into like a trance, and she supposedly was channeling some demonic entity, and that this demonic entity said that, you know, aliens and UFOs was a deception from the demonic realm, and that they were going to, you know, have their day was coming when they were going to unleash this great deception on the world. So again, you know, it's like you have things like that. And, you know, keep in mind that Sam Bruno that I was talking about, he was one of the members that was there when she went into that trance and started saying all this stuff, including a couple of members of the writers, which people now today know as the Collins Elite. So, like I said, you know, you have some of the most prominent people that were there witnessing all this. And like I said, most people have never even heard of it. They don't know anything about it.
I mean, continuing on with like the fallen angels research, I guess you could say, it seems like obviously with a lot of like remote viewing type experiences. People will make reference to there being like different beings and stuff like that that'll like watch them around them. It kind of links into like the whole like sleep paralysis concept too. But it almost kind of makes you wonder if they're doing their own type of research to be able to see if they can find a way to make the human soul disconnect from the human vessel, and in turn they would be able to inhabit that vessel. But I've heard the whole concept of like the silver cord, that you cut the silver cord and then, you know, the soul isn't necessarily able to come back into the vessel. But, you know, at the same time, when you cut that cord, the vessel may shut itself off completely where something else can't necessarily inhabit it. So I'm kind of curious if it's a continuation that these things are actually trying to convince a lot of people to start doing remote viewing so that they can actually figure out their own side of it and figure out how to inhabit these bodies when you're gone and be able to cut that tie and be able to inhabit them and basically take the place of the soul itself within like the human vessel. And then from there, they wouldn't even necessarily have to make artificial bodies. They would just have God's created bodies minus the human soul, and they would be able to take their soul and try to attempt to put it in it.
Well, and that was the thing. A lot of the remote viewers were having encounters with these things that you're talking about. You know, that was the thing when they first started the early remote viewing program, is that they would be focused on a particular target, and then all of a sudden their focus would shift to something else that was in the area. You know, usually something that was moving or something that was, you know, up above, like maybe 20,000 feet or whatever. And they kept, you know, seeing these craft and different things, as well as bizarre things. But even some of them, like Joseph McConnell and even Ingo Swann, you know, they would sometimes pop up in these craft, and they would be inside the craft with all these entities. And, you know, one time McConnell, in one of his books, he wrote that he not only popped into this craft, but he said that they all stopped what they were doing and they were looking at him like, what the heck are you doing here?
Dude, these crafts too. Do you think that these things are actually as we perceive they are? Or do you think it's one of those things that they look completely different in a different realm, and we're only seeing the perspective of these things that they want us to see? Because even like diving into angels, everybody knows that, like, you know, the physical, the way we see angels is usually from the perspective of they'll look like a human type being, sometimes with wings, they'll be like really beautiful looking people. But when you dive into like what the Bible says that they actually would look like, it's all this different spinning wheels and the rotating eyes and everything like that. So I'm kind of curious if the ships kind of have the same thing going on, that they're presented to us one specific way, but these things look a completely other different way. And they're just trying to, again, push this phenomenon, because, you know, if you have people that don't necessarily believe in demons and angels, then they're going to be interested in the extraterrestrial concept, because they're going to be like, oh, you know, I get to see aliens, I get to do this, I get to do that. And they're trying to disconnect people from these biblical concepts so that they can usher in this stuff without people being aware of their trickery already.
Well, you see this quite a bit, you know, with people that are observing something and they pull out their phones or their cameras and they start recording. Well, they might see something with their naked eye, seeing it one way, but when they record it and they look back at the footage later on, it looks totally different from what they were seeing with the naked eye. Well, you also have several pilots. I believe it was, Brian Graves, the one that saw the craft over there off the East Coast, or Ryan Graves. He, you know, they talked about how they would, you know, different pilots would see different things, even though they're both in planes flying right there in the same proximity, and they see this. One sees one thing, one sees another, and they're both seeing it at the exact same time. Well, we've even seen this out at Skinwalker Ranch. I believe it was in the Hunt for the Skinwalker book. It talks about Axelrod and some of the people that worked out there, and we'll get into that, you know, here in a second. Axelrod, that's another good one. But him and two other people were out there, and they were out in the field. They had the night vision goggles, and they were in different locations. One was, you know, however many hundreds of yards over this way, one was 100 something yards over that way, and then this one was like 100 yards away from both of them. And so it's almost like a triangle, and this light appeared, and, you know, they all started focusing in on this light trying to figure out what it was. And one of them said that they saw a triangle, another one said that they saw a sphere, and then another one said they saw a cube. But they were all three looking at the exact same object. And even, you know, some of the things that people have seen out at Skinwalker Ranch, not just the alien creature or predator creature that people talk about, but even some of the cryptids, you know, the Sherman family, they talked about how sometimes one would see something and then another person perceived it as something else. So, yeah, I believe that they totally have some way of appearing to us however they want to. And like I said, even Jacques Vallée in his book, Passport to Magonia, talks about a lot of this stuff, how they've changed their appearance over throughout time. You know, like back in this, was it late 1700s into the early 1800s, they were like people that lived in airships, these dirigibles and things like that. Even back before then, it was like fairies and gnomes and things like that. And, you know, it wasn't until like this in the early 1900s that, you know, it started morphing into like silver craft and, you know, big bulbous head, you know, gray looking aliens and things of that nature. So
hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
I say, it kind of makes you wonder if these things don't necessarily have a form or necessarily choose a form, but they almost kind of just fit in with what the public's perspective of them should be. It kind of reminds me of that old Twilight Zone episode where they're all in like that airplane hangar and the one guy's like, oh, I see a red plane. The other guy's like, oh, I see a blue plane. The other guy's like, oh, I see this. And the whole idea is that you're only seeing the same thing if you all establish that you're seeing the same thing. But if nobody establishes that you're seeing the same thing, then everybody could be seeing different things and you have no idea about it. But once there becomes a center public focus, then after that, it kind of trickles into everybody's mind that this is what you're seeing. And then everybody starts seeing that thing because society as a whole starts seeing that thing. So again, it kind of makes you wonder if it's a matter of like human perception that we make this stuff up and then in turn they kind of just play the role behind it and these things are actually just completely formless, or if they actually do pick their form in order to, again, just kind of throw a new charade over it every couple of years. It's almost like the government projects where they just rename them every couple of years. That's what these things are doing. They're just picking a different form and a different name, and they're not even necessarily picking their names. Humans are putting the names on it, which kind of makes all this stuff super duper clustered because, you know, you dive into fairies, you dive into extraterrestrials, you dive into the paranormal stuff, and you notice all of these different ties between all this kind of stuff. And the only reason that they're categorized separately is because we as humans have categorized them separately, but they themselves have not categorized themselves separately. And it's not until relatively recently that everybody in these communities are starting to combine that we're noticing all these commonalities between all these things. And there seems to be a spiritual factor, again, between all of these things, even though, you know, people that were into cryptids were trying to stay behind the whole science, flesh and blood thing for a while. And people with extraterrestrials are trying to get into, oh, these are things from other planets, but they're all coming back full circle to this whole like spiritual realm concept. And one of the main components that seems to be something that comes from the spiritual realm is these orbs and all the different phenomenon are all seeing these different types of orbs. So again, it's bringing another commonality between this thing, but realistically, like an orb, it's something disembodied, which again goes back into, are these orbs fallen angels and they're just taking the form of whatever happens to be the phenomenon that you're experiencing at that time? Because, you know, people see Sasquatch, they see UFOs, they see ghosts, they see orbs, and then they end up seeing the ghosts and everything afterwards. So again, it's these disembodied beings coming in and then taking the form of whatever you start perceiving that you're experiencing.
Yeah, and they all go hand in hand a lot as well. There was a 1600 account that Jacques Vallée wrote about in one of his books where a dark cloud came down out of the sky, and he said that it landed and that there was a large hairy creature that came out of it and was walking around for a little while, and then it got back in the dark cloud and the cloud lifted up and took off. So that's another thing, is that you see you know, these UFOs and Bigfoot and things like that go hand in hand, because they're usually one is spotted. There's usually somebody else has an encounter with one or the other that, you know, is, you know, going on in the background. And real quick, I was going to get into the whole thing. I was talking about the orbs. There was the gentleman that I was mentioning a while ago, Axelrod, who's one of the characters in the book, The Hunt for the Skinwalker. And it's later come out and it's been revealed who he is. I don't know if you watch The Secret of Skinwalker TV show on History Channel, but he is on there quite frequently. His name is Jay Stratton. And if you don't know who Jay Stratton is, he is the boss of Lou Elizondo, as well as Dave Grush, as well as Travis Taylor. So this guy is, you know, very high up in naval intelligence and, you know, worked at the Pentagon and a bunch of other places. And this is the guy who knows more than anybody else out there. And he was one of the early pioneers working with NIDS and Robert Bigelow out at Skinwalker Ranch. And after he had gone out to the ranch, something attached itself to him and started messing with his family. His wife was the first one to encounter it. She started seeing like shadow people walking around in the house, people stomping up and down the stairs. Just weird things. But one day she just happened to be walking by the back sliding door in the house. She looked outside and she saw this 8-foot tall, what looked like a dogman or a werewolf, standing up against a tree, and it had its arms crossed and was just sitting there staring at her, just giving her this like really, you know, hateful look. And she sat there looking at this thing for a couple of minutes, and she's like, am I imagining this? Is this real? You know, she didn't say anything, and it finally turned around, it ran off, and she's still sitting there and she's still thinking about it, but she didn't say anything to anybody. Well, a couple of days later, her kids were down in the area. One was on the couch. The other one was going into the kitchen. As he walked by, he's like, oh! And the other one that was on the couch jumped up and come running in there. He's like, what is it? And he looked outside, and there it was again. This 8-foot tall looking wolf creature just leaned up against the tree, just sitting there staring at it. And after a couple of minutes, it turned around and took off running, but it was running on two legs. And it was kicking up leaves as it was running down the street. And they didn't know what to think about it. But it started spreading out through them and their friends and family members like a virus. That's another thing about the hitchhiker phenomenon, is it spreads like a virus. So, you know, one of the kid's friends started seeing orbs flying around in his bedroom at night and out in the backyard and stuff like that. And they didn't say anything to any of their friends. Their friends started telling them they were seeing weird stuff, that things were happening. So then they knew that, after they talked to their dad, he came to the conclusion that this, whatever this is, it can spread, because it even affected some of his coworkers. So people that Jay Stratton worked in the office with, there was a lady that he worked side by side that worked at a desk right over there close to where he was. Her and her roommate were seeing bizarre, crazy things, to the point that after about 2 days, the roommate moved out because he just couldn't deal with it anymore. So,
man, it almost makes you wonder if they will purposely try to get these attachments to attach to people just for the sake of maybe trying to, as they perceive it, like help these beings out. Because I know that there's a lot of conspiracy around Skinwalker Ranch. And one of the things that I've kind of dug into and heard from a lot of different people is the whole fact that there's a lot of ties to like the Church of Latter-day Saints linked in with the Skinwalker research. And of course, with every organization, there is going to be corruption with it, especially if you're looking at stuff from whatever your religious perspective is. And my kind of belief on it is that, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that the Church of Latter-day Saints, they believe that like heaven is like another realm or another place that they can actually physically get to by using a means of like a portal or something that they go through. So I feel like a lot of the research at Skinwalker Ranch is them trying to do that. But on the other side of it, of course, you're going to have people that masquerade like they believe in this particular religion, but they, of course, have different means. So, you know, they're involved with this stuff, trying to open these portals. But I'm kind of curious if they're trying to open it with the intention of letting things out and attach to other things so that these things are able to come into our realm more. Because if they're able to spread like a disease, assumably it's like, you know, they're just going to keep spreading, and essentially they're just going to keep letting these things out until it gets to a point where, you know, they've helped these things out enough that maybe they think they can get a favor or something. Or, you know, once enough of them are here, maybe it's one of those things that like the realities want to balance out. And if you have enough stuff from that other side here and you try to open the portal, maybe the portal will be wide enough if there's enough of something that's supposed to exist on one side, on both sides of it now.
Well, the Mormons, we got a lot of issues there if we're going to get into bring up the Latter-day Saints and the Mormons, because of what they believe and who started that organization. You know, it's like you look into Joseph Smith, and Peter Lavenda has wrote a book that I highly recommend anybody who's curious. It's called The Sorcerer and the Stone. And, you know, that was the thing, is that they were mainly, you know, him and Brigham both, they were about him and Joseph Smith and Brigham, they were both, you know, 33rd degree Masons. That, you know, he had lots of occult books, and he wore an amulet around his neck called the Sorcerer's Stone that actually had sigils and demonic ritual, you know, stuff on there. But and not only that, but even his own parishioners killed him. You know, they put him to death because he tried to shut down the printing presses, and there was a uprising, and they fled the city, and then they came back like a month or two later. They locked him up in jail, and then when the mob came for him, somebody had snuck in a gun to his brother, and when they were coming up the stairs to get him, the brother, you know, shot somebody in the face, and then whenever they came, made it through the door and opened fire and shot his brother said, "They've killed me," and he fell down dead. And you know, Joseph Smith tried to jump out the window, and the mob was down there waiting for him. So it's like, you know, when you really look at what they believe in, that they believe that God came from a planet called Kolob, and that he lived a perfect life, and that that was his reward, was coming here to Earth and being the God of this planet, and that there's a female counterpart, and that they birthed all of us, and that Lucifer and Satan are brothers. So, like I said, it's like, how far do you want to get into this? Because like I said, I have a lot of issues with the Mormons, and I'm not trying to be mean or hateful, but you know, they don't follow the same Jesus, and they don't preach the same Jesus as most Christians. So
it seems like there's a lot of religions that most people have this idea about it, but it's linked in something completely different. Like, primary example, like Freemasonry. Like, I have the Freemason Bible that I found at at some random antique store. And of course, it's like, it's the Bible, but they write it from a specific perspective where it's like, kind of almost tries to make the bad characters look like the good characters. Like, it's somewhat like flipped and reversed, even though it's semi like the same book. But I mean, the Church of Latter-day Saints, most people hear that and they assume that they're somewhat maybe like the Christians, have somewhat of the same belief system and stuff. But once you start diving into it, you realize that their whole belief system is completely based in like more extraterrestrial type concepts and like occult time concepts than it is anywhere near like what the Christian or Catholic perspective of the world is. And
well, not only that, but they have more in common with Islam than anything. Both of their religions were supposedly started by a archangel that appeared, like Joseph Smith. I forgot what Metatron or whatever the name of the angel was that he dealt with, and that he told him how to decipher the golden plates. And he was basically putting the plates in his hat, and he was sticking his face in there, and he was scrying is what he was doing. And like I said, that's where they get the Book of Mormon, and they read more from the Book of Mormon than they do the Bible. So like I said, right there, we've already got an issue. Same thing with Islam. You know, Muhammad went to this cave and was choked out by this demonic entity that his family later went on to say, well, that was the Archangel Gabriel that you encountered. Well, how many accounts have you ever seen in the Bible where the angel was choking somebody out? That sounds more demonic than anything. It doesn't sound, I mean, there's been, you know, occasions where they've appeared for people and people literally lost control of their bodies and fell down in front of them. And they would say, stop that. Don't do that. Get up. But I don't remember any where they were choking him out. And like I said, he kept telling him to recite something, and Muhammad kept saying, I don't know what you want me to say. And he just start choking him. So,
I mean, even being an angel though, like that would be the means that you choose to attack somebody with. Like, you have all of these different abilities that humans, I feel, aren't even fully necessarily aware of, but you're going to choose to choke somebody out physically as a means of trying to get your point across. Like, it just doesn't seem very angelic just off of that simple factor, that if they were going to do anything like that, I feel like they, again, would have a totally different means, like just using their ability to be able to basically make somebody fall and just feel pain and crumple in front of them. Like, why choke the person? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly.
But diving back, I kind of want to dive back into like the Mormon aspect with some of your research too. Are you kind of like in the camp with the fact that you think that they're the ones that are trying to open up these portals, and that the whole intention with Skinwalker Ranch is that they're trying to open up portals to let these demonic type beings in, and that the whole like Skinwalker narrative that's hidden behind it is more so, again, just another mask over what they're actually trying to achieve at this location?
I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say that I believe that they're trying to do anything nefarious and trying to make contact with these entities. I think that they're curious just like everybody else. I think Brandon Fugel is a really nice guy. I would definitely love to sit down and talk to him and discuss the gospel. You know, I wouldn't have anything, there would, you know, it wouldn't be anything mean or hateful, no animosity. I just take issue with a lot of the stuff that they believe and what they talk about. And like I said, when you realize what they truly believe, it's like there's a lot of error there. So,
I mean, I feel like a lot of this stuff, again, is very compartmentalized, that, you know, just because somebody's involved in this research, I don't think they necessarily know what all the means might be from the high ups, that the reason why they're actually doing this research. Like, you know, they make them believe that you're going in to do this something that's good, but it could be completely something nefarious that's coming from like the higher ups, and all the people that are actually physically doing the research are, you know, not aware of what's actually happening. It's a lot like some of the UFO research, where you'll get these crafts, and they'll try to like reverse engineer them, but they won't give them the entire craft and say to reverse engineer it. They'll give it pieces of it. They'll give them pieces of it and say, figure out this piece. So they don't know that this entire thing goes to a craft itself. They're just looking at compartmentalized pieces. So I feel like, at least for what they theoretically could be doing with the location of Skinwalker Ranch. I feel like the people that are actually part of Church of Latter-day Saints that are there might only know what they're intended to know, but they don't know why the church as a whole might actually have interest in these locations.
Well, not only that, but you've never really had any, like, really people that are really steeped in Christianity. I'd say that, you know, the Jesus of the Bible, you know, the like I said, they don't necessarily read the Bible. They read the Book of Mormon. And the only other person that I've seen out there as far as like a spiritual type person that they had out on the ranch was a Judaic rabbi. So again, like I said, I don't, and I'm not volunteering. I definitely don't really want to go out there onto Skinwalker Ranch because I'm not trying to, you know, mess with the hitchhiker phenomenon. I don't want any of that trying to come back and attach to me or anything like that. But, you know, I just mainly want to elucidate and to show that this stuff is all connected. When I talk about the hitchhiker phenomenon, how it gets into not only Skinwalker Ranch, but also the remote viewers, as well as people who have come in contact with actual craft or entities, and that, you know, that's the commonality right there. So, you know, we're talking about the fruits of these things. And then, you know, we take it a step further, and it's like, well, we got Joseph Jordan, who has done the research, who's a MUFON researcher, where he's uncovered, you know, almost 700 cases where people that cried out in the name of Jesus, these things stopped. But if they accepted Jesus as their Lord and Savior, they stopped permanently. So he's got this, you know, this scientific approach that's repeatable, that if you call out in the name of Jesus, you can put a stop to it. But if you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior, you can end it permanently. And like I said, I've seen this, and the, what is it? The people that deal with, the sleep paralysis. And they talk about the shadow people, you know, same thing with aliens and UFOs and other things. So it's like, if these things are what people think that they are, why would the name Jesus have this profound effect on them and cause them to run away? That's the question you really got to ask yourself.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out CryptoTology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid-related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there, you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in. I'm glad that you brought this up, actually, because it was either Vicky Joy Anderson or Karen Wilkinson, both of them write with, like, L.A. Marzulli and stuff, and when they came on the show, they mentioned this whole concept, and but they brought up the fact that you have to believe it in your heart, otherwise it doesn't end up actually doing anything. So it's like, if you don't actually believe in God, you don't believe in Jesus, and you're calling out to Jesus, it doesn't have the same effect as if you actually believe in it. Kind of like what you're mentioning, where if you give yourself to him, then it stops permanently, is because it's like, when you call out in those instances, of course you have some type of belief in some kind of higher power, but once you completely give over to it, then these things completely stop. It just shows that, again, there is some type of
working or reasoning behind this kind of stuff. And again, it also kind of links in with like the extraterrestrials just being another mask of something else, because I don't know who was the first one that actually ever ended up trying that or figured it out. But I mean, if they run from that name, either one, there's power within the name, or there's power in something that's going to, I guess, make them like pay for their actions, so to speak. So again, it kind of goes back into that narrative that there has to be something to it that's linked into something biblical. Like, as much as people want to try to throw it all out with the bathwater, but like there is some kind of tie to it. And it's just a matter of whose perspective you dive into. But if you're taking in all of the pieces as a whole and you're not actually just trying to filter them through one certain person's perspective, then this is a reoccurring thing that always comes back up, that whenever there's an abduction experience, you call it to Jesus and these things let you go, completely go away. Like, again, just showing, kind of showing that it's kind of weird how we're moving into this whole like sci-fi type era, but there's still this underlying work of the Christian belief system. And it shows that either one, they're completely trying to push people away from it because there's full on truth in this, or two, they're trying to possibly make people think that they have something on them and they don't actually have it. But I definitely kind of lean towards more towards the fact that there's a reason why Christianity as a whole is getting attacked as all of this weird phenomenon is continuously starting to rise, where it's even getting into politics now. It's getting into entertainment as a whole now, that everything is just so laced in Christian / occult symbolism that it's just undeniable at this point. Like, I feel like even when there was a lot more people who had faith, there was less reference to this kind of stuff in media at the time, you know, where now, again, they claim that a lot of people have moved away from religion. So why is this stuff so prominently everywhere now? It's because people don't understand the power and they're just right over their head.
Look at the news. I mean, you know, back in 2017, when they announced that UFOs were real, you know, and even before then, there was a guy in the Canadian government that came out and said UFOs are as real as the planes flying over our head. You know, it's like, this is all coming out. They are talking about it now. You know, even Bob Lazar back in the 80s, when he said that, you know, they had craft out there at Area 51 out at S4, and people were like, you know, he's so full of it. And then you got Dave Grush, who comes along later on, and he's like, yes, we have recovered craft. You know, he's like, he goes, we got probably close to 13. But even Bob Lazar, when he went on Joe Rogan's podcast and was sitting there talking about one of the craft out there, and this one, I mean, it was one of those things where my jaw hit the floor when he said it, because he said one of the craft that they have out there at S4, they found it at an archaeological dig. So he said, it's not just old. He goes, it's ancient. So now we're getting into the whole thing about Vimanas and things like that. And it's like, okay, you know.
And I mean, connecting in with like, again, the fallen angels and Nephilim concept, you get into like Chariots of the Gods and how all of these ancient gods from all these ancient religions and belief systems all had these like miraculous flying type devices they come down from the sky and everything. And again, once you start digging into stuff from a biblical perspective, you kind of start realizing that a lot of these gods that people thought were gods from other religions fit into the fallen angels concept, that these fallen angels came down and convinced these people in these areas that they were gods. And then from there, they ended up forming a whole belief system based on these beings. So it's like, it's there that the fallen angels were riding these weird flying vehicles and they were seen as gods. And now it's just transitioning into something else where, you know, if you see a flying vehicle, instead of assuming that it's some type of god, like ancient people would have done, now you assume it's an extraterrestrial. So again, you're giving a name, different name to the same exact phenomenon that people were experiencing in the past and trying to deny that it's not more than likely the same thing. And again, whether you believe in the Christian belief system or not, like there's these continuous things that you see through all this phenomenon that becomes undeniable. And no matter what perspective you view it through, you still have to take in the fact that all of this stuff is clearly the same and all connected.
Yeah. And even, Mike Heiser's research, The Divine Council, and that's going to be one of the areas that I'm going to get into in my next film, is I'm going to do a film on the Nine. And I'm going to tackle that subject because, you know, you start looking at every pantheon, every civilization, there was always nine gods that ruled over all the other gods and around the world. You know, and people are like, well, there's only one God. It's like, well, you need to go read your Bible, because Bible says that there's more than one. Now, there's lowercase g gods, of course, But you remember in Psalm 82, when it's talking about the divine council, it said God takes his place amongst the gods where he reigns supreme. And then he renders a judgment against these gods because they had taken worship and they had led man astray. And they had, you know, basically caused us to, you know, they were corrupting humanity. And he talks about these 72 gods that are going to die like men. Well, so now we know that there's about 72 of them, and then there's nine that rule over the whole 72. And so you look at the Ennead, which is the Egyptian gods, and there's nine that rule over. Same thing with the nine gods that rule over Mount Olympus, the nine gods over China, and, you know, just on and on and on. You keep seeing the nine. And then years later, there was Purerich, who was part of Edgewood Arsenal. He got mixed up with this... this guru guy, I can't think of his name right off the top of my head, but they started doing these seance sessions, and they were channeling these entities that refer to themselves as the Nine. And so this is where you get the whole thing about the Council of Nine. And Gene Roddenberry, as well as Lee Harvey Oswald, and a lot of people were mixed up in this. You know, most people didn't even know Lee Harvey Oswald was mixed up in it until, you know, that's come out. Gene Roddenberry was big into this. I mean, this is where he channeled or got a lot of his information that would eventually go on to become Star Trek. And you see it completely, you know, just it's entrenched in Star Trek.
Like the Archons? Like they're just these disembodied beings that can control all of reality and stuff. Like I'm going back to the original series right now, and it's just weird stuff you start noticing.
So you got NCC 1701, 1 plus 7 plus 0 plus 1 equals 9. There's always 9 crew members on the bridge at all times. You got Deep Space Nine. You got the 9 Bajoran gods that ruled. I mean, just seriously, we can sit here and do this all day long.
Connecting in with all the AI stuff, kind of connecting in with that, also having some type of demonic tie to it. You also have the Borg, too. They're like these human-like type, or these biological beings.
They're always in groups of 9.
Yep, they were always
in groups of 9.
They're connected with technology, and in turn, this other hive mind started controlling them, which again kind of seems like it's kind of falling in with the whole demonic side of the AI concept right now.
Yeah, but remember, each in the Borg, they were always in groups of 9.
Yep.
So I mean, again, like I said, we can sit here and do this all day long, but that's the thing is, so you got these lowercase gods that have ruled over, and so, like I said, you know, it's like Bel, Set, you know, it's like they were known by different names, you know, throughout the world, through different pantheons, different civilizations, but they were the same ones. And even Aleister Crowley, later on, and before he died, in one of his books, he wrote, he named them. He talks about it. He said, I serve my master Lucifer and his Augustus Council of Nine. And he names all 9 of them. So we are dealing with these same 9 guys that have been ruling over humanity until Jesus comes back and puts an end to all this. But that's the thing. It's like, there has been a judgment. And, you know, even people that say, you know, I don't know about the fallen angels. I don't know about the Nephilim. I don't know if I believe. Well, why do you think that it says that? Do you not know that you shall judge angels? Well, the very fact that we will be judging angels, that should infer that there was a crime committed by angels against humanity.
And I mean, just to further that point, too, you start looking into these old gods and you start trying to understand what they represent. And it seems like they represent things that are the negative side of humanity. So just to make an example, usually have some type of god that's like a war god, which is obviously like pro-murdering other people. Usually have one god that's like a luscious like type of party god, which is obviously definitely a sin. And then you usually have a god that has something to do with like bringing knowledge or bringing something to the humans, which again kind of falls into the whole idea of that forbidden knowledge that's being brought into the humans. So it's like, you start looking into like the archetypes of all these old gods, and again, like you mentioned, they're all the same, but the archetypes seem to be, when you look at it from the biblical perspective, like the stuff that humans weren't necessarily supposed to have, which again was that knowledge that the fallen angels brought down and gave to humanity that corrupted all of us. But all these ancient religions, belief systems, that, again, just the main one, they all have some type of like war god, one that is the one that taught them how to fight, that taught them how to work metal, that taught them how to do this. And then again, you go into the biblical perspective, and that was one of the main things that they referenced, was these fallen angels coming down and giving humans the knowledge to know how to work metal work in order to create weapons and stuff. And then just to make another one too, I mean, you also have a fertility god, and she's always this beautiful one that all the humans actually want to like you know, have intercourse and stuff like that with. And that kind of gets into the whole like Nephilim concept that, you know, you of course want to have a beautiful one that's going to corrupt the people into thinking that it's something beautiful and just furthering on that gene pool of the Nephilim bloodline.
And that's the thing. Like a lot of people, they talk about the Nephilim. They're like, they were all male. They were this, that. No, that ain't, that's just not true. In fact, I can bring up a point that would actually shatter that paradigm, is that there is a footprint over in Africa known as Goliath's footprint. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but Tellinger and who else? Brian Forrester, Hugh Newman, a lot of them, they've all gone out there. There's video footage of this footprint. It's huge. It's almost 4.5 feet long. And it has 6 toes. And they've taken molds of it, and they said that this was from a female. It's a female footprint. Now, how they came to that conclusion, I can't honestly tell you one way or another, but they apparently got smarter people that have looked into it than me, and they said that this was a female footprint. So apparently there were female giants. So take that and put it in your pipe and smoke it if you want to.
I mean, whether or not that was actually something that actually first came down with the first generation of fallen angels, I mean, as soon as they started breeding with humans, assumably there was going to be a male and female counterpart. And when you get into the whole idea about keeping the bloodlines pure, where they tried to, you know, getting into the whole royalty concept and the whole elite concept, trying to keep these bloodlines pure, you're going to need the male and the female aspect. Otherwise, with each generation, you're going to be degrading your bloodline because you're going to have to rebreed with, you know, say a female human, for example. Like, the logic behind it doesn't make sense for there to be all just one specific gender of Nephilim or fallen angel. Like, it makes sense for them to be both, and that would be how they would be able to theoretically keep these bloodlines pure, is by having both counterparts and trying to at least keep the generation where it's at with the bloodline, where you have the human aspect to have yourself physically in this reality, but beyond that, you're trying to keep it as pure as possible to the Nephilim bloodline while just having that human component to be able to stay here.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Kind of diving on a little bit towards the end, you mentioned that you're going to be working on another film. I know that you probably haven't gotten too crazy into that, talking about all your research and everything for it, but just to give people a little bit of a teaser before we start wrapping stuff up, why don't you let them know a little bit about what, one, inspired you to work on this next project, and two, what kind of direction you want to take it in, to kind of leave them a little bit of a teaser to look out for.
Well, I've always been fascinated with the subject of the Council of Nine. There's a couple of authors out there that have touched on a lot of this and written about it. Peter Levinda, one of them. Yeah, the fact that there's been nine gods that have basically been ruling over all the nations of the world and have been steering humanity. And, I mean, you even have researchers out there like William Bramley, who wrote the book Gods of Eden. And he started out, you know, he was an attorney, and he just wanted to write about, you know, all the things that basically drove humanity to war, and why we were constantly at war with one another and fighting throughout different, you know, parts of time or whatever. But he, through all his research, he eventually came to the understanding and the belief that there was something non-human that was driving humanity to war, causing us to kill one another. And so, you know, it's, in fact, it was George Knapp was the one who brought it to my attention. He was doing an interview with Joe Rogan, and he was on there with Jeremy Corbell, and he brought up that book and started talking about it. And it's like, you know, so you got people that aren't even Christian researchers who are coming to the same conclusion, that there is something evil and demonic that is literally driving humanity to kill itself. And he even, Joe Rogan asked him, he said, why do they get out of it? And he said, something to do with the soul. I don't know, you know.
I mean, one of the things with these beings, too, is that, you know, we think of our human perspective that everything has to have a reason, but to these other beings that are, I don't want to say like above us, so to speak, but just they're advanced in a totally different way, they may not have the same motives. Like, there may not be like a, this is why I'm trying to corrupt humans. It might just be that that's just what they do because that's what they are created to do. You know what I mean? Like, they don't necessarily have a means of why they're doing it. They just do it. And just another comment you were making about the nine too, power is within division. So of course, if you were the fallen angels and you guys came down and you corrupted everything, in order to keep your power, you'd want to keep everything split into multiple factions of even the same type of religions, because it seems like most world religions, they're all based in the same principle, but they have these little dividing factors that split everybody off. And in turn, those little dividing factors are what makes everybody fight. But if you had everybody all under the same rule, then of course you'd have an issue eventually where those people would rise up against you. But if you keep everybody divided and fighting, then you can control all powers, make it seem like everybody's fighting each other. But realistically, the people that are running all those factions are all the same people, all in bed together, and they just keep everybody divided so that they can do what they're trying to do without anybody becoming wise to what they're doing.
And this, you know, I mean, this is the main thing that we need to take away from all this, is that, you know, they knew a judgment had been rendered against them in the Garden of Eden. You know, God said, I'll put enmity between your seed and her seed, you know, that your head will bruise thy foot, and he will crush your head. So they knew that there was a judgment, and they knew that it had something to do with the bloodline. That was the whole point of them sending 200 fallen angels down on Mount Hermon to basically come down like a commando unit and try to corrupt all of humanity to blot out the coming Messiah, as well as to make God a liar. And, you know, they talk about, when David killed Goliath, you know, it's, some people speculate that whenever he, after he, because it talks about, he supposedly took the head back to Jerusalem and buried it. It doesn't say specifically where, but, you know, a lot of people speculate that he buried it at Golgotha, you know, and the very fact that that could be prominent is that when Jesus was up on the cross, every time he was having to lift himself up by his impaled feet to take a breath, he very well could have been, you know, I mean, that prophecy could be more prophetic than we ever even imagined, that every time he was lifting himself up, he was crushing the skull of Goliath underneath him. So, I mean, that's what it was all about. It was all about Jesus. And the fact that, you know, he had to come in the flesh and live a sinless and perfect life, because nobody was capable of fulfilling the law. And that by doing so, he gave us a chance. And it was the same thing with the flood of Noah. That was basically God hitting reset button, you know, hitting the reset button, giving humanity a chance to come back from that, because they had corrupted so much flesh on the planet, not just human-wise, but animal-wise as well. If you look at the Book of Enoch, it talks, there's this part in there called the Book of Giants where it talks about the monsters and, you know, that they were the brothers of the giants. So, I mean, you know, the fact that he was willing to flood the earth to try to save humanity, and that he came and, you know, lived a sinless, perfect life and was the ultimate sacrifice, and that all we are required to do is to accept him as our Lord and Savior and try to repent and turn from our wicked ways and to live a good life and to, you know, live by his example. I don't think that's asking too much.
No, not at all. And it's kind of weird, again, talking about the fractions within religion, too. It seems like there's, again, so many different religions that all work on the same concept of God, but one of the main deterrents comes in with like Jesus himself, which obviously is an extremely important figure with all of this. So why is it that so many have tried to stray away from that besides realistically like Christians and Catholics? Everybody else, you know, they seem as like a prophet. They seem as this. They don't necessarily seem as the Son of God or acknowledge him in the same way as Christians or Catholics do.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's why you have several of the apostles talking about that, you know, anybody that comes and preaches another Jesus other than the one that we taught you, let them be accursed. And that's what we see in a lot of these religions, is that they are not preaching the same Jesus. I mean, the Mormons, you have to read the Book of the Mormon. Well, that right there, that's already a big strike. You know, it's like, and then when you find out all the other things that they believe as well on top of that, it's like they have strayed so far from what, you know, the apostles taught and what Jesus himself taught. It's not even funny.
And I mean, they've even tried to corrupt even from within the religion, because how many times have people tried to make reference or theories about how Jesus was actually was romantically involved with, why am I brain farting on it right now?
About Mary Magdalene,
yeah,
supposedly.
Mary Magdalene, yeah. So it's like, even within that, they try to leave a little hankering of corruption even within like the Christian and the Catholic Church, where it's like people kind of question whether or not that might be something. But again, it's just leaving a seed, hoping that it'll spread into a big tree of corruption.
Well, you know, and the Catholics have their own issues as well as idolatry. And, you know, a lot of the people that, I mean, when you look into what they talk about the Jesuits and the Knights Templar and all that, I mean, it's so horrifically evil. You know, I mean, I could sit here and do a whole episode just talking about that. I mean, seriously, you know, if you read the Jesuit Oath, what it talks about, how they would literally strangle Christians in the womb with their own umbilical cord, and how they would bash their heads against the wall before, you know, they even have a chance to gasp their first breath and things like that. It's like, that does that sound like the society of Jesus to you?
I was going to say, the Knights Templar, they had enough stuff hidden behind where they were actually praying to, like, Baphomet. They were never actually, like, a fully Christian organization to begin with. And, I mean, they only arised as something to take on, like, the Hospitallers to begin with. I mean...
Yeah, because that's the thing is, and I can't remember the guy's name, but you can go look it up. There's a quote by a gentleman from the 1800s that said that the head of the Masons... the head Mason of the world, as well as the head Jesuit of the world, are the same person. So that's another thing right there, is that they are completely in league with one another, even though I know supposedly the Catholics, you can't be a Mason if you are, you know, a Catholic, and vice versa. You know, it's like they have these rules, but they're one and the same. They all, you know, they're all working side by side in league with one another.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, even within, like, the major organizations and everything, it's like, so people have so many links to these different societies and everything that if for any big organization, there's always going to be some kind of corruption in it. And I don't mean to sound like I'm talking bad about any specific group, but even with good intentions, there is going to be somebody who's going to try to corrupt it. And in turn, it's going to give a bad name for the rest of the organization going down. So, I mean, all of these secret organizations may have started off theoretically with something decent, but they quickly turned into something bad as soon as people found the ability to corrupt and, you know, make money, for example, from these things.
Well, not only that, but they also believe that the Pope is the mouthpiece of Jesus on earth and things of that nature. So it's like, when you know that the only intercessor between you and Yahweh is Jesus, I mean, that says it all right there. It's like, you don't need to go to a Catholic church. You don't need to go to a Mormon church. It's like, if you can buy a KJV Bible and sit down and read it, you know, and surround yourself with like-minded people who actually believe what the Bible says and not what they want it to say, and worry about their feelings and things of that nature. Because, I mean, there's a lot of Christians out there that get hung up on pre-trib rapture, you know, Hebrew roots, you know, just lots of different things. And it's like, you know, I just don't see how they can go down some of these rabbit holes that they go down, like that, you know, saying that we got to go back under the law. It's like, well, we know, you know, what the Bible told us, the law was a curse, you know, nobody could keep it. So why would you want to go back under something that you yourself can't complete? You know, you're not going to be able to do it. So, and you have to reject Jesus to go back under the law. So it's like, we can sit here and talk about things like that. But these are the things, you know, same thing with people who believe in pre-trib rapture. You know, they want to talk about, you know, we're going to be raptured up out of here, I'm jumping to meet Jesus and things like that. But it's like, if you read, you know, Matthew 24 and Mark 13, that's not what the Bible says. And it's like, you're not arguing with me, you're arguing with Jesus, because these are the words coming out of the mouth of Jesus when the apostles came and asked him and said, you know, Master, Master, how will we know when your return is imminent? Well, he's telling them all these things. He said that, you know, after the tribulation, then the sun will be darkened, then the moon will turn to blood, then the stars will fall from heaven, the sky will split open, you'll see the coming of the Son of Man in the heavens. So, you know, everybody else, it's always like, well, we're not going to be here for that. Well, first of all, why would we know a lot of the stuff that we know about, like Ezekiel, Daniel, the book of Revelation, all this stuff about the man of sin, the son of perdition? Why would we know about any of this stuff if we're not going to be here for it? And, you know, this whole thing that we're not to be, we're not to suffer the wrath. I always hear them saying that one as well. And it's like, no lie, because Jesus will pull us up into the clouds. We will be up there before he pours out his wrath. But the thing is you're not getting out of the tribulation. You're going to be here for it. Why? That's why it's in the book for us to read. And that's why the book of Revelation says it is a blessing for those who read this book, because you need to know this stuff. You need to be able to talk about it and explain it to people, so when they have questions, you can give an answer.
And that's
what apologetics is all about.
And that's where I feel like the new age of, like, all of this Christian belief is kind of coming into, is that the old belief system kind of blocked everybody off from actually really diving into these types of questions. But, like, the new age Christian belief system, it's like, you're almost like following the words of the Bible itself. You're actually reading into the Bible yourself. You're not getting gatekept through somebody else that is, like, the mouthpiece for all of this stuff. Like, people are actually able to dive into it and ask these questions and actually dive into this stuff, which honestly, I believe is why we even have the Bible in the first place is because it's intended for us to dig into, not for somebody to gatekeep and tell us what they think that it believes. It's intended for us as a whole to be able to all try to understand it together, because that's the only way you're going to get anywhere with trying to understand this stuff is if you have multiple perspectives on things. If one guy is reading something and he's reading it in the way that he chooses to read it and nobody else sees the text and they just spat it at somebody, everybody's going to blindly believe that. But if you have 10 people read the same line, all 10 of them are going to decipher it totally different ways. But once you find that there's a commonality between how these people are deciphering it, or you notice that 5 people read it this way, 2 people read it this way, and 3 people read it this way, of course, like, you're going to have to kind of go with what the group as a whole ends up deciphering it as, because it just, that's what it's intended for, is that we're supposed to figure all this stuff out together. We're not supposed to just let one person dictate all of this stuff to us. And that's the reason why everybody has access to it. That's why everybody is supposed to know the words of the Bible, is because it's almost like a puzzle we're all supposed to figure out together to try to understand where we are in society, in the world, and where the world's going to be coming to. We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. Kind of wrapping up towards the end, man. I always like to do words of wisdom before we wrap up. Kind of leaves everything on a high note. I know we've been kind of talking about somewhat words of wisdom a little bit, but if there is any particular words of wisdom that you could bestow on the listeners today, what might it be?
I would just say that if you have not accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, I would encourage you to make this that day, and that you not only know who your creator is, but have a personal relationship with him. So I encourage you out there, if you've not made that decision yet, let that be today.
And if anybody wanted to be able to dive into your research, come and find your documentary. And if you have like a kind of set time for when your next one might be coming out, so people can keep an eye out for it, where can everybody find you on the internet, and where can they keep track of all of your research and different stuff you're doing?
A lot of people follow me on Facebook. I'm on there. It's facebook.com/Chad or /Chad.Riley.12, I believe. I'll give you the link. That way you can link it in there. But I also have a YouTube page called True Seekers Research, where I have the trailer and a few other video clips that I've put up, as well as some talks that I've given. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you making the time to come on today, man. And of course, I will include all the links down in the show description so everybody can find it quick and easy.
And I'll send you the link for the Vimeo for the Skinwalkers and Stranger Things of the Unseen Realm, which is my newest film.
Well, I really, really appreciate it, man. And I appreciate you making the time to come on today. And hopefully we can do this again at some point. It was a really fun conversation, and I'd really love to dive more into your next documentary as soon as you get a little bit more rolling on it and everything.
Sounds good. It's my pleasure.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, having me as a guest on your show, sponsoring the show, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can get a hold of me through email, which is inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook, or through the submission form, which is available on the link tree. And the other submission form that's on the link tree is for reporting an encounter. So while you're at it, don't forget to report an encounter to omm.encounterreports@outlook.com. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.